out if you like. He's in the wizard's pantry. Why is he posthumous? Moist asked as they stepped out into the corridor. He's dead, said Pelk. Ah, I was kind of hoping that it was going to be a little more metaphorical than that, said Moist. Don't worry. He decided to take early death. It was a very good package. Oh, said Moist. The important thing at a time like this was to spot the right moment to run, but they'd got here through a maze of dark passages, and this was not a place you'd want to get lost in. Something might find you. They stopped outside a door, through which came the muffled sound of voices and the occasional clink of glassware. The noise stopped as soon as the professor pushed the door open, and it was hard to see where it could have come from. This was indeed a pantry, quite empty of people, its walls lined with shelves, the shelves filled with little jars. There was a wizard in each one. Now would be the right time to run, Moist's hindbrain thought, as Pelk reached for a jar, unscrewed the lid, and rummaged around in it for the tiny wizard. "Oh, this isn't him," said the professor cheerfully, seeing Moist's expression. "The housekeeper puts these little knitted wizard dolls in just to remind the kitchen staff that the jar shouldn't be used for anything else. There was an incident with some peanut butter, I believe. I just have to take it out so that he doesn't sound muffled."
"So, where is the professor, in fact?"
"Oh, in the jar, for a certain value of in," said Professor Pelk. "It's very hard to explain to the layman. He's only dead for—"
"A given value of dead?" said Moist.
"Exactly! And he can come back at a week's notice. A lot of the older wizards are opting for it now. Very refreshing, they say. Just like a sabbatical, only longer."
"Where do they go?"
"No one's sure, exactly, but you can hear the sounds of cutlery," said Pelk, and raised the jar to his mouth. "Excuse me, Professor Goiter, can you by any chance recall what happened to the chandeliers in the post office?"
Moist was expecting a tinny little voice to reply, but a sprightly, if elderly voice a few inches away from his ear said,
"What? Oh, yes, indeed. One ended up in the opera house, and the other was acquired by the Assassin's Guild. Oh, here comes the pudding trolley. Goodbye." "Thank you, Professor," said Pelk solemnly. "All is well here." "Fat lot I care," said the disembodied voice. "Be off, please. We're eating." "There you have it, then," said Pelk, putting the wizard doll back in the jar and screwing the lid on. "The Opera House and the Assassin's Guild might be quite hard to get them back, I fancy."
"Yes, I think I shall put that off for a day or two," said Moist, stepping out of the door. "Dangerous people to tangle with."
"Indeed," said the professor,
shutting the door behind him, which was the signal for the buzz of conversation to start up again.
"I understand some of those sopranos can kick like a mule."
Moist dreamed of bottled wizards all shouting his name. In the best traditions of awaking from a nightmare, the voices gradually became one voice which turned out to be that of Mr. Pump, who was shaking him.
"Some of them were covered in jam," Moist shouted, and then focused.
"What?"
"Mr. Lipwig, you have an appointment with Lord Vetinari."
This sank in and sounded worse than wizards in jars. "I don't have any appointment with Vetinari, do I?"
"He says you do, Mr. Lipwig," said the golem. "Therefore you do. We'll leave by the courtyard. There is a big crowd outside the front doors."
Moist stopped with his trousers halfway on. "Are they angry? Are any of them carrying buckets of tar? Feathers of any kind?"
"I do not know. I have been given instructions. I am carrying them out. I advise you to do the same."
Moist was hustled out into the back streets, where some shreds of mist were still floating. "What time is this, for heaven's sake?" he complained.
"A quarter to seven, Mr. Lipwig."
"That's still night time. Doesn't the man ever sleep? What's so important that I've got to be dragged off my nice warm pile of letters?" The clock in Lord Vetinari's anteroom didn't tick right. Sometimes the tick was just a fraction late. Sometimes the tock was early. Occasionally one or the other didn't happen at all. This wasn't really noticeable until you'd been in there for 5 minutes, by which time small but significant parts of the brain were going crazy. Moist was not good at early mornings in any case. That was one of the advantages of a life of crime. You didn't have to get up until other people had got the streets aired. The clerk, Drumknot, glided in on hushed feet, so soundlessly that he came as a shock. He was one of the most silent people Moist had ever encountered.
"Would you like some coffee, Postmaster?" he said quietly.
"Am I in trouble, Drumknot?"
"I wouldn't care to say, sir. Have you read the Times this morning?"
"The paper? No." "Oh." Moist's mind ran back furiously over yesterday's interview. He hadn't said anything wrong, had he? It had all been good, positive stuff, hadn't it? Vetinari wanted people to use the post, didn't he?
"We always get a few copies straight off the press," said Drumknot. "I shall fetch you one."
He returned with the paper. Moist unfolded it,